And let's take a breath out now. And I'm joined from our Sligo studio by our clinical psychiatrist, Dr. Tony Bates. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan. And I am a psychologist rather than psychiatrist.
I beg your pardon. You are, of course, yes. And Tony, we're going to talk a bit about minding ourselves over Christmas. But look, first, I suppose let's deal with the moment that's in front of us. I think there is a bit of fear and uncertainty around now. I think a certain amount of anxiety attached to that in people this weekend. How can we settle ourselves a little bit?
Well, as the fellow says, ask me one about sport. listening to Rita Ann there, it did strike me that, you know, poets are superheroes in dark times. And listening to her and being, perhaps because I'm in Sligo with the ghost of Yeats hovering over me here, I just thought of a line he wrote when he said, "A burden too long carried turns the heart to stone." And we thought we were emerging from the fog of COVID, and now we're being asked to endure it even longer. And I think the question is, how do we do that without allowing our hearts to turn to stone? And what does that mean anyway? But how do we carry this a little longer? I think that's the question we're all facing. I think we're anxious. I think we're on edge. I think we're caught in that tension between planning for, you know, Christmas Day, planning for the best, and yet underneath that there's this flat undertow of wondering, you know, what is going to happen? Who will make it? Who won't make it? Who'll get sick? And I think we feel very vulnerable. So every mother is doing her damnedest to keep going and some fathers to make this day work. But everybody is living with a lot of uncertainty. So how do we cope with that? And I suppose, you know, psychology, when I think about it, has really only one thing to say to the world. I mean, at the very end of the day, it says, or at least psychotherapy, it says, look, if you can be honest and honour your own subjective experience, your own fears, your feelings, the tension you have inside, something will shift, something will move. And that is why we talk and why we struggle to find the words to say what we feel. And that's a radical thing to do, because it's easier to do something else, to
push it away,
to push away anxiety. And when we do that, that's when the heart turns to stone. And there's two ways that we know human beings classically turn to stone. One is that they fall into a depression trap, or the depressive position, they call it, where they kind of give up and say, well, to hell with this, I'm helpless, there's nothing I can do, I'm powerless, and they kind of slip down deeper under the duvet cover. And that's a very dangerous pace, because, well, we know that. And the other is the paranoid trap, which is that I begin to feel really annoyed and angry at the world for the situation I'm in. And I start to project all my hurt and frustration out onto others. The government is awful. The NPHET are awful. And I start then to feel like one of the conspiracy movement, or maybe I sign up because I think, well, they're the only people I can trust. They know what's wrong. And all of those things give me a kind of feeling of solidity, but they're terribly, I would say, dangerous positions to fall into, because nothing changes, nothing moves. We get stuck. Our hearts turn to stone.
Okay. So the simple way then, and I suppose you say this in different ways every time, but it is to acknowledge where we're at, sit with it, and also to connect, yes?
Yes, very much. To be very honest about it, and to recognise that you might have there's a whole spectrum of emotions. There are those who feel really sad and enraged about the whole thing, and there are those who feel okay about the whole thing, because it has refocused us on, you know, what's really important in our being together and making that happen in some way. And also, but to recognise too that there isn't any easy answer to the position we're in. The question for me is, how do we move forward? And I think families need to be asking themselves, is there something I need that could help this whole week become be bearable.
Okay.
And I know, I was talking to my wife this morning, I know that one of the things that we normally think about our kids and, you know, there's three families that are coming and, you know, hopefully. But I think this year we're going to ask all of them something, you know, just each of the children, something very small, but that would actually make, I think, a huge difference. And I don't want to go into what they are, but they're little things, you know, very small, but they could make a big deal, a big difference. And I know everybody anyway is going to be helping, but just think about who's likely to be there and what each person could bring. Or if everybody did one thing to make things different, what would that one thing be?
Okay, I like it. And you see, Irish people, we're divils for not saying what we want and then getting bitter when we don't get it, aren't we? So yes. tell people what you need from them. Tony, I know you're also saying that that's on the positive side of things. Maybe on the slightly more negative side, if I can put it like that. You're saying as well to actually physically sit down and make a list of potential stressors over the next week or two, yeah?
I think we get carried up in the with how frantic everything is, and there's so much to do, and we make lists all the time and check them twice. But I think this list is about what's likely to be hard for me this Christmas, and that's a kind of reflection that we don't easily do. We it's easier to avoid thinking about things that make us uncomfortable. So, yeah, I'm saying just think about the stressors. We normally wait for the stressors to cause stress, and then we go into stress management and we start breathing and we start doing nice things and we start relaxing and we go for that's fine. But actually, what about just see, can you get them, what is it, knock them off at the pass, but just think about the stressors themselves that are likely to happen. Think about them now. Don't wait for them to come. I think people feel very stressed when they think that, like, Christmas is happening to them. It's something that they're kind of victims of. And it's much easier to think, okay, how can I shape what happens so that I feel some control, some agency? And that's what I think the other thing psychology is always trying to give people is a sense that they have some agency over their lives. It doesn't make everything quickly right, but it's enough to help them to take the next step in whatever territory they might find themselves.
So take our power a little bit. I suppose, Tony, though, part of it is that we got into a very reactive mindset because we're punch drunk now from things coming at us from this way and that way, and Omicron being the latest, that there seem to be so many things in our worlds now that are out of control. And Christmas, again, is a time when, you know, you've got other things you can't control, like other people and that.
Yeah, and we hate being out of control. We hate not knowing what's going to happen next. And we find it very hard to stand in a space where we can say, I don't know what's going to happen next. I heard the Taoiseach make that comment once or twice in different ways. And that's truth. I mean, that is the truth. We have been through an awfully hard time. And I feel deep sympathy for people who are really taking the brunt of this. But I suppose in that same moment of feeling a deep sympathy for other people's pain, it doesn't necessarily help them that I just offer my sympathy. You know, I want to offer something which gives them back some degree of self-agency, some degree of control, somewhere to go next with this. And so I do think if you want something to happen differently, you need to take the risk to do one thing. And that one thing might be to talk. It might be to talk to your family. It might be to exercise. It might be to rest, because this is a very tiring week at the best of times.
Okay, so just one thing could be the start of taking control.
One thing always leads to another thing happening. And, you know, when you do one thing different, something different happens. And even if it doesn't work, don't give up on that one thing, because you could learn something from that. And ask yourself, how did it feel for me to do one thing, to take that little thread of control and follow it? And did I learn something? Could I do it again? Could I do it differently? So, you know, it's just.
And you see, look, it can be difficult for people with busy lives, people with small kids, people juggling work at home and everything else, and now Christmas. It can also be difficult for anyone to actually get space for themselves, can't it, at this time of year particularly? And
I think that's
probably important, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that Christmas is a great time for reconnecting and meeting, and, well, we're not going to be meeting so many this week. But, I mean, normally it's full of people and full of Zooms or full of phone calls, and they're beautiful, those reconnections. But I also think it's important to take time alone, just to let things settle, you know, not to do anything particularly, and people do that normally or naturally through jogging or exercise or something. But I think that can get lost very easily at Christmas. So just maybe remind yourself that actually it's okay that you take a little bit of time to walk around the block without bringing anyone with you, or without feeling you have to bring somebody with you. And don't be apologising when you come home that you didn't bring them with you. Or to go to a local...
Probably a French or an Irish goodbye is the way to go, isn't it? Just duck out, say nothing, and head off.
Duck out, say nothing, come back, and then surprise everybody. I've just been walking for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love walking, and it just... The thing about walking is you don't have to do anything, but you have to be patient. You've got to allow your mind to settle, because initially when you go walking, you meet all this noise inside your head, and it's not pleasant, and you're trying to figure things out. No, stick with it. Just walk. And then with time, the mind settles, a bit like snow in a snow globe. It just finds its own place, you know, its own still point. And then you start to think more creatively. Some creative thought will come always to all of us when the mind can be allowed to settle. And that's maybe as you return home, or even as you're turning the key in the door to go back in, it just hits you, something creative. And you think, you know, that's really a good idea. I might just go with that today. So, yeah, time alone.
Yeah, okay. And you're saying, you see, the walks now, a lot of people, particularly, I think, with these bloody AirPods and earbuds and stuff, it's either music, radio, they're on the phone or they're whatever. But you're saying no distractions, just try and walk.
I'm not laying down any rules for anybody this week.
Make suggestions, though.
As I said, the problem with so prescribing so specifically is that for one person, an audiobook, one of the things I want to do this thing is I want to listen to A Christmas Carol, an audiobook. I want to actually go back to the source, because it's a wonderful story about somebody, you know, who listened to their experience, and then out of spending time with themselves, they began to turn outward in their energies and became kinder people to others. And that's really what psychology is trying to hold out for, that it's okay to take time with yourself. It's not selfish, it's responsible. And that when we do, we naturally, our humanity naturally turns outwards, and we begin to think of other people and the world.
Okay. Talk to me, Tony, about darkness and light, because I have a note here that you're saying that we need to accept the darkness, but not to let it win.
I think the world we live in is made up of light and darkness, and it seems to me that we need both in a strange way, because the darkness helps us to see the light. It's often, I mean, for me, a great example of that now is the story of Glenisk, the factory that burnt down, and listening to, is it Vincent you had on some mm-hmm. time back? And, you know, it was a very dark moment for that whole staff, that whole team. And yet what struck me was the incredible kindness that it highlighted that's out there. A kindness is always hidden in plain sight, and sometimes it only comes into visibility when there is real darkness. And so sometimes the dark can bring that. And equally, I think the light we all love, but if we are only moving into the light, we ignore and forget, or we don't see the suffering and the darkness in other people's lives, and we can become very selfish and lose empathy. So we need both in some ways, and the question is not to allow the darkness become oppressive if it goes out of balance. It does. But I want to have a space for the, and the darkness for me this week may be physical darkness, but it may also be the anxiety I feel about, you know, the current situation in the country with COVID, the worry, the being on edge all the time, and in some ways I've got to sort of believe that that is a part of my experience, part of this journey I have in my human life. And if I can just honour it in some way, that it will help me to see something else. I think I was thinking today, it's kind of a silly thought, but, you know, no matter how dark things get, we need to kind of keep a roof box open in our brain, which allows a little light in. Because that's, I mean, this whole week is a celebration of darkness and light, and that it's often at the lowest point in our lives that something beautiful breaks through. And we created a monument to you know, announce this to the world and to remind each other. And so, yeah, darkness and light, it's, they're both in play.
Okay. Tony, I don't like to throw too many texts at you because I know you don't have answers off the top of your head for everyone's specific problems. But there is one here that I think might reflect how a lot of people are feeling, is that a texter asks, are we all a bit out of practice when it comes to the simple act of making conversation? I do think that, are we a bit rusty on being with other people apart from a very close circle maybe? Anything to say to that?
I think we Irish are fabulous conversationalists. I remember my son went to college in London and he said, you know, the difference over here is people go to the pub to drink, and in Ireland we went to the pub to talk. I think people are good talkers. I think what I'm talking about is what's hard to talk about. I mean, what psychologists are interested in is what we don't easily have language for. So it's a kind of experience inside us, a feeling that we can't quite. But what I'm saying is, it's great to have a friend that you can take time with to put language on that experience. Mm. And it's amazing what comes. So there's the, I think maybe we're great at banter, maybe not so great at that deeper stuff, because we've known a lot of heartbreak, and we've learned to, you know, we've learned comedy and banter to kind of cover over that, or to be a light in that darkness. But we're not often good at what has to be said in a very difficult time.
Speaking of what excuse me. Excuse me. Speaking of what has to be said at a difficult time, Tony, there's been a lot of chatter, I think, over the last few weeks, and someone texting here to say, should we avoid difficult discussions on Christmas Day? There's a time and a place, etc. I think a lot of people are nervous of various relatives or friends or whatever who they know have different views to them on what's going on at the moment and everything else. And it is going to be, friendships are being sundered over this. It is going to be a tension in a lot of homes this Christmas, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. But you know what? I mean, it is a kind of an achievement of the human race that, and of all of us, that we can form opinions about things that matter to us. And say, vaccines, for example, that I can form a very strong view about, you know, wanting a vaccine and appreciating it and so on. But somebody else might have a different view. And I think that a lot of the time when people get together, it's their need to argue is they need to defend their view. And what they're really trying to defend is their right to have a view, you know, that, you know.
OK.
And I think just all of us need to say, look, it's OK. We can all have a view. And I think there are two ways I know to sort of diffuse that, which is one, to really try and understand the other person's point of view, even though you may not agree with it at all, but just to kind of realise that they're coming from a totally different set of assumptions and listen to them. That can be good, and that often calms them down because they feel listened to, and we all like to be listened to. But the other is to say, for all of us and in a family, to say, look, having opinions is great, and we're all strong-minded, headstrong people in this family, but actually being together is even better. And what do we need to do to make that happen? So there's a higher good, something greater than just having your own opinion.
Okay. clinical psychologist, Dr. Tony Bates. Thank you very much and have a happy Christmas,
Tony. Happy Christmas, Brendan.
The texter there is wondering about what you're going to ask your various children. Does Tony mean he's going to ask his kids to do the washing up? But you're not telling, and that's your right, and we'll take a break.